This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. We're in the Sky Bet Championship after five straight league defeats. Cardiff City appointed Mick McCarthy as their new manager. For those keeping count in Skybet League One, it's now 53 goals in Rochdale's last 11 games. And in Skybet League Two, cold weather, including snow, ice and rain, led to four of the midweek fixtures being called off hours before kickoff. We've got another couple of cracking guests for you this week. I'll give you a clue. If your name's not Ben, you're not coming in. Do you think we can get away with that? It's the official EFL podcast. All a little bit disjointed then in terms of fixtures across the EFL's three divisions with the FA Cup and both COVID and weather-related postponements. But a constant presence at the top of the Sky Bet Championship, Norwich City, who are 5 points better off at this stage than they were 2 years ago when, of course, they won the league by 5 points. The difference for them this time around is they have at the heart of their back line a player described as one of the best young defenders in the country when he joined Burnley in the summer of 2018, only to find the following 2 years, Ben Gibson played just 6 times before finding salvation at Carrow Road last September. Shall we do that grim period discussion first, Ben? Shall we get that out of the way? I mean, what did you learn about yourself, mate?
I learned a lot, to be honest. That was the most challenging time in my career, probably the most challenging time in my life. You know, everything, I think life's about perspective. So it's, whilst that might, someone in the outside world might listen to that and go, well, hang on, all he's doing is not getting a game of football. Yet he still gets well paid for it. He's still part of a football club. It's a nice life. Life is about perspective, and you know, we as footballers sacrifice a lot of things to be in the position that we're in, and we dedicate our whole lives to playing football matches and trying to get to the highest level we could. And for 2 years, for different reasons, really, I didn't feel I got much of an opportunity at Burnley Football Club. And look, that sometimes happens in football. That's what happened there. It was a real tough time for me. But what I learned is that mentally, I'm a tough cookie in a way that I can, you know, I didn't let it finish me. I affected what I could in that time. So I thought, well, if I'm not getting a game, what can I do? I can make myself the best athlete and do extra work and make myself the best version of me that I can be. So I employed my own sports science / physio, whatever you want to call him, at that time. So I'd finish training at the club and then I'd go home and work hours, long hours into the night with the guy that I'm talking about to try and make myself the best version of me that I could. And obviously throughout that time, I hoped that the opportunity would come. When I say an opportunity, I don't mean a game, you know, a one-off game every few months where you might get a cup fixture in a second string side. I mean, a run of games. And look, it didn't happen. The manager picks the team. The manager will have his reasons for that. Obviously, it's not something that I agreed with, but I'm on a pastures new now, and it certainly didn't break me. I think it made me stronger mentally. It certainly made me as hungry as I ever had been, if not more, to prove people wrong, to achieve success again and taste success on an individual level and a team level. And this opportunity at Norwich presented itself, and it's one that I'm really, really enjoying. We play football in a way that I think suits me. The manager encourages me to apply the attributes that I have to the game. You know, he encourages me to step in, to be brave with the ball, and he demands nothing less. And I'm having a thoroughly, thoroughly good time here. And I hope that it's one that can be really successful towards the back end of the season.
Well, it's great to hear you sounding so brimming, because we need to remind ourselves, I mean, A, a big decision to leave Borough, B, you're on the fringes of the kind of England squad and actually made one of the squads. Did you at any point, as you looked for solutions, worry that you might be cast as the outcast in this situation, that it might be something to do with you?
Yeah, I mean, people only hear one side of the story when something like that happens. So people will see Ben Gibson left his hometown club, bought for £15 million, didn't play, had a couple of injuries. People will assume that all of that is down to me. I obviously don't believe that it is. I try as hard as any player as I've come across to make the best of what I have. I work extra hours physically in the gym. I work extra time on the pitch. I look after myself. I do everything I can to the best of my ability. And yet sometimes as a footballer, you know, you have to go along with the system. So you can't have a voice. You can't have an opinion. You can't sort of come out and say what you're feeling or what you're currently experiencing at that time, because you would sort of be a bit of an outcast. So it's a very difficult time really, where you've sort of just got to keep your head down and get on with it. And you might not agree with certain things that are written about you or said about you. You might not agree that you're not getting picked or that you're not getting an opportunity. And I think it's pretty clear that I didn't. And you know, it's a very, very difficult time that I never imagined would come in my career. When I signed for Burnley, I was really optimistic that the club had just qualified for Europe. I believed that they'd give me a fair opportunity to play because of the size of the transfer fee. I think that was their joint record transfer fee at the time. So there was no reason as to why I didn't believe that I could play. I'd always backed myself to take an opportunity once it would arise. And I just didn't think that a fair opportunity really came. So really, real tough time. I won't sort of gloss it over and pretend that everything was fine. It was a painful time for me. It was a painful time for the people that care about me, because they could see me struggling. They could see me that when I was coming home, when I say struggling, I come home, I'm in a mood, I'm not happy. Sometimes you take it out on them. My poor girlfriend, you know, she probably got the brunt of it, and really appreciate all the people around you. That's what a time like that does. So they were always there to say, look, don't forget what you can achieve and what you have done in the past and what you'll go on to do in the future. This is just a moment in time, and football can, as I say, life is about perspective and football's about perspective. And sometimes football's about one person's opinion. And that was one that someone should play in front of me at that given time. And yet everything can be so different. As I say, you spoke there about when I was in the England squad. When I signed for Burnley, I wanted to, part of leaving my hometown club that I was captain of, which, as you know, Clem, meant a lot to me and does to anyone from Middlesbrough.
Of course.
I wanted to make sure that I was going to stay in that England setup. I spoke with Gareth, and Gareth said, look, I want you to be part of it, but you need to be in the Premier League. And so I thought that move fitted the bill, but on this occasion, it didn't materialise. As I say, it certainly didn't break me. I now have to find a different route, but I still have exactly the same goals. And that route is Norwich City Football Club. And as I say, it's one that I hope everyone feels like I'm taking the opportunity. I'm certainly doing everything in my power to do so.
Yeah, well, listen, Norwich are a brilliant story. I just want to finish this off by just saying, really unusual situation, because actually you actually left Burnley and trained with Middlesbrough, even though you're on Burnley's books. But was one of, am I right in thinking, before you signed for Norwich, one of your options was to potentially go to the MLS, to go and play in the States?
Yeah, so to be honest, it was the January where I wanted to leave Burnley. Being 18 months with no football, I'd actually wanted to leave after a year, when it was clear I wasn't going to really get an opportunity, and the club wouldn't let me go, and they said give me a bit more time. And it got to 18 months. That was the January, and I wanted to go. I think it was Watford that were coming in for me, and the club didn't want to let me go to a team that was in a relegation rival as such, so they didn't want me to go to Watford. And I was okay with that. I understood the principle of that. And I said, well, if that's the case, you know, you might have to take a lesser offer from the Championship, but I just want to play football. I could sit here comfortably taking a lot of money, and that is not what I'm about. I'll go back to the Championship. I can go back to another club. I'll take a step back to go forward again. No problem. But the club didn't want me to do that either. So clearly we had a bit of a falling out, which we don't really need to go into the ins and outs of, but that resulted in me basically being given three options from Burnley, which was I'd train with the reserves till the end of the season, I'd train with Middlesbrough till the end of the season because they knew the affiliation I had there, or I could go on loan to an American team because that was the only transfer window open at that time. So,
gotcha.
Again, I sort of mulled over them decisions, and they accepted an offer which was obviously significantly less than Watford's, but it was a loan offer for 6 months to LA Galaxy. And I was stuck on that at the time because there was no opportunity for me to play. I was either going to train with Middlesbrough or play for LA Galaxy. And I was a little bit like, well, do I want the stigma of some English players go over there and and have a holiday basically towards the end of the career. And that clearly wasn't what it was about for me. It was going to be about, this is the only platform I have to play football matches. As it happened, I got there. We were there for a week and the world went into lockdown. So we quickly came back before I even got into sign. So from that point on, I trained with Middlesbrough when Middlesbrough resumed training. And the idea was that I'd continue to do so until I left the club in the summer, which I eventually did.
Well, listen, you've joined arguably the most consistent team in English football at the moment. Right, here's some stats for you, okay? So 4 defeats in 25 you know about. But if we combine this half season with the full championship season for Norwich of 2 years ago, it is only 10 defeats in 71 matches. I mean, that is a club that is remarkably at home in your current environment, Ben, then. That's what it says to me.
Yeah, I'd say so. Obviously, there's no doubt in what they achieved 2 years ago was phenomenal. I remember them sort of bursting into life and just going on a run. It just felt like they won every week. And to be honest, I think it felt like they won 3-2 or 4-3 every week with a last minute winner. And I remember watching from afar and what they achieved was very special. And look, they had a rough time last season in the Premier League, but I think to achieve what we have in this first half of the season is really special, because there's multiple things when you get relegated out of the Premier League. You're facing a relegation hangover, you're facing players' futures are uncertain. There's obviously leftover emotions from what happened last season, that's throughout the building. And I think what the manager's done and what Stuart Webber have done here is they've wanted to squash all that and strip it right back to what they know they have. And they know they have a fantastic setup here, because that's what they've put a lot of time and effort into. And they know they have players that here in the way that they play that can be successful in this league. And they've built on that. They've added a couple to it, myself being one of them. And it's gone really well so far. So it's a fantastic stat what you mentioned, but we've got to make sure now that it's a stat that you talk about success over 2 years and not just 18 months.
But when you've got the momentum that you have and you're all part of it, and I think one of the other stats, forgive me, I haven't updated it the last couple of games, but I still think it's pretty sure. I think you've picked up something like 20 points from goals in the last quarter of games as well, which again, as you know, tells you a hell of a lot about a club's characteristics, doesn't it?
Yeah, Mass. I think two things on that. I think one, like you say, mentally, the sort of characteristic of a never say die attitude, constantly believing in each other, constantly believing in, you know, the gap will appear, the chance will come, and that we're going to run till the end no matter what. I think that plays a huge part. I also think the way that we actually play the game, that we wear teams out with our possession. You know, a lot of teams come here, particularly to Carrow Road, and they sit in and make it difficult, try and starve us of opportunities, but let us have a lot of possession because they know we're going to accrue a large amount of possession in the game anyway. I feel like that style of football, the way we play, sort of also adds to that, because we tire them out, we break them down, eventually the gap appears and we've managed to take advantage. There's been times where we haven't. I think Millwall at home, we drew 0-0. Coventry at home, they ended up getting a last-minute equaliser when we should have put the game to bed. So there's been a couple of little frustrating ones like that we can improve. And I'll be honest, I'd rather it not be left till the last couple of minutes, particularly from a defender's point of view. But listen, we've done it well, and that's something that we're going to need to continue to do if we want to be successful this season.
Yeah, I mean, listen, solid at the back, great spine of the team, but obviously, you know, there's a couple of names I'm going to mention. We had Michael Morrison on a couple of weeks ago. He said, if you take your eye off Teemu Pukki for a nanosecond, that's it. He's found some little bit of space that you don't think is there, and he's off and you've lost him and you pay the price. What's he like in training?
Yeah, he's absolutely spot on what he says. Teemu is exactly that. He has one of his biggest talents, to be honest, is that he plays on the periphery of the game in a way that you can look at him and the same happened today. You can look at him and think he's not really interested. He's not, because he's sort of quiet and he's floating around and he's not invested in the game. But that's basically a con. That's a lie. It's fabrication. And then honest, because you're looking at him and think, yeah, he doesn't want to know you. And then bang, It's you switched off for half a second and he's in behind you. And it's the timing of his movement, the timing of the run that he makes, which is unbelievable. And he finds himself a yard, and 9 times out of 10, he takes the opportunity. So long may that continue.
Yeah, and Emi Buendia is the other one, of course, who just, it feels as though he can conjure that little bit of magic, again, out of absolutely nowt, completely change a game.
That's a very Middlesbrough term you've just used there, absolutely nowt.
Yeah, well, I wanted to make you feel at home, mate. You know, you've had a tough couple of years. I wanted you to feel like nice and comfortable and things.
I appreciate it. Now, listen, Emi, look, he's a bit of a maverick, to be honest. He really can produce something special out of nothing. Wonderful, wonderful talent and great attitude. Just a sheer love of the game. Just when you strip it all back, doesn't think too much about it, doesn't overthink anything, just loves playing football. Every day in training, you see it, whether you're messing about with the ball, every time we get on the pitch, he wants to get the ball. He wants to make a difference and make an impact, and he has the quality to match it. So he's been a pleasure to play with. He demands a lot from himself and demands a lot from others, as I do, to be honest. And look, you wouldn't want that any other way. I know if I don't give him the ball in the pocket, he's going to scream at me. And I hope he knows that if I land it on his toe and he doesn't score, that I'm going to scream at him as well. So that's the sort of the nature of our relationship. It's worked really well so far, and long may that continue, because a talent like that, we just got to keep giving him the ball and keep feeding him, and we know that he'll make a big impact.
Do you know what? I can't help but feel when I listen to your story so brilliantly described that fit can go both ways, can't it? You can find yourself in the most difficult and challenging situation, personnel change, but very quickly you can find a fit that is just around you like a well-tailored glove. And that's what it sounds like you've found down there. And it must be a great joy as well, just discovering something new, especially when you've had a tough time, just to go into that kind of environment. And I always think with Norwich as well, the vibrancy of the yellow and the green, and it's a very special characteristic there.
Yeah, no, it is. There's a real warmth about this place. From the minute I got here, I've mentioned it before, but we walked in the canteen. The first person I seen was a lady called Vicky, who was like a front of house, and so warm and welcoming, and literally every person that I've met and come across after that has been the same. And it's a real family atmosphere what they've built here, and it's fantastic to be part of. And like you say, yeah, look, I had some tough times, which again, it's the perspective of the way you look at it. For me, they were tough times. For other people, they weren't. But for me and my family, it was 2 tough years. And look, I think people will have ripped me off in that time. People will have thought, what's happened to Ben Gibson? He's fell off the face of the earth. You know, or they might have even thought he's comfortable. He's got his move. Da, 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 da. None of that is true, and it couldn't be further from the truth. I couldn't have done any more. I couldn't have worked any harder. So for me, Clem, it makes it more comfortable. And, you know, I was watching, I know it's a year since Kobe Bryant passed away, and I was watching him speak yesterday, and some of the highlights from him before he died. And, you know, he talks about perspective a lot, and he talks about his sort of Mamba mentality that he called it. And just the way he was so driven, and the way that he focused on what he could control and him making the best of what he had was unbelievable. And look, I try and do that with every aspect of my life. And I know for the last 2 years I did that. And at the end he spoke about he had nothing left to give to the game of basketball, because he knows he'd give absolutely everything. And so there's nothing I look back on in that 2 years and think there's nothing that Ben Gibson could have done differently, because I know that I give absolutely everything. And look, if a good season with Norwich and we achieve promotion is the outcome of that now, then that is the reward for looking after myself and maintaining everything, maintaining my standards, maintaining my level of fitness and my mental capacity to be the best that I could be in those difficult times. And as I say, people will have ripped me off, but I know what, I don't need to shout from the rooftops, but I know what level I've been to in the past, and I know what level I aspire to get into, and that doesn't change because I'm 2 years further down the line. So
yeah,
it's been a wonderful start. I've really, really enjoyed it, but that's all it is. It's just a start for now.
Yeah, of course it is. But, you know, life can turn in a moment, can't it? Find yourself back in the Premier League. There's a certain matter of a World Cup at the back end of next year. Who knows where it might lead. Listen, I've got the fixtures here from this coming weekend. Friday night, Reading against Bournemouth. Birmingham, Coventry. Coventry going to St Andrews as the away team rather than at home. Brentford entertain Wickham. Cardiff at home to Millwall. Swansea visit Rotherham. But I've missed out the 12:30 on Saturday. And, well, listen, we know you're a Borough lad. We know you've always loved and followed the team, but when you're up against the family business as well, mate, you're up against Uncle Steve. Your dad's brother is Steve Gibson, who owns Middlesbrough. Must have just been a bit freaky when you ended up at the Riverside earlier in the season, and will be again to be receiving them this Saturday at Carrow Road.
Yes, real strange experience, to be honest. Probably better off having the experience without the fans being there, because that would have been even weirder. You know, so many amazing memories, not just as a player, but growing up in that stadium as a fan. You know, I think about when we got to Eindhoven in the UEFA Cup final, the runs when we ended up winning the Carling Cup at the Millennium Stadium, some of the big scalps we used to take at the Riverside when the club was a regular Premier League club. So, just a bizarre fixture for me. And, you know, I just try to focus, again, just so much on the performance because, as I say, I'm paid and I'm here to do a job for Norwich City Football Club. And it's as simple as that. If I don't do that, then I've let myself down. I've let my family down. I've let everybody here at this club down. So it is weird. It's not something that I think I'll ever get accustomed to or ever get used to. I get plenty of text in the build up from friends and family. And I'm not sure how much of my friends and family are actually supporting me in this game, but as I say, I get paid to do a job and that's what we'll intend to do. And after that job's done, I really hope that we finish first and I hope that Middlesbrough finish second.
Do you know what, Ben? Final question. I mean, I'm not doubting your spot and integrity for a second, but does anybody at the club actually come to you and say, is this a bit weird for you? Does Daniel Farker actually know that your Uncle Steve owns Middlesbrough and stuff like that? Does anybody talk about it to you?
Do you know what? The don't so much. Stuart Webb has dropped it in a couple of times. But no, not so much. I think that the lads know what it means to me. Like, I think, as you know, Clem, the people that are probably around you, it's a strange little town is Middlesbrough. It doesn't get the best press in the world, but anyone who's from there is extremely proud to be from there. And anyone who's lived there has loved it. And yeah, it might have a couple of little faults, as does everywhere, but I think a lot of us that are from Middlesbrough and supported Middlesbrough will always have that affiliation and that love for the place. And I seen Tony Mowbray speaking about it in the build up to Blackburn playing Middlesbrough the other day. And I know he feels the same way. And that's something that I see from everyone that's attached to Middlesbrough in any certain way. So look, we are all proud to be there. And I think naturally, the lads here will have heard me and John Hugo speaking about our love for being from there and the people there and our friends in certain places. But as I say, this week in particular, we just have to focus on getting the job done.
Enjoy making up for lost time. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, mate.
Top man, Clem. Take care, mate.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clint.
In Sky Bet League One, Lincoln City currently lead the way from Hull City. Both won away at Portsmouth in the past week, and bottom club Burton Albion were the latest to be affected by COVID. As for this coming weekend's fixtures, Sunderland entertain Gillingham in the early kickoff on Saturday, and then at 3 o'clock, Wimbledon and MK Dons resume their rivalry. If it's a goal fest you're after, then Rochdale are at Bristol Rovers. Four of the top six play each other. That's Charlton against Portsmouth and Lincoln entertaining Doncaster. Hull are at home to Swindon and Peterborough visit Shrewsbury Town. As for clubs in Sky Bet League 2, it was what might have been for one of them. There cannot have been too many neutrals tuning into BBC One last Saturday evening who with just 10 minutes to go weren't hoping that Sky Bet League 2 promotion contenders Cheltenham Town could hang on to their one goal lead to knock Manchester City out of round four of the FA Cup. Wasn't quite to be, with City eventually scoring three late goals despite the best efforts of Cheltenham's captain and the game's man of the match, Ben Tozer. And I'm imagining, Ben, you've been a tortured soul ever since, turning over what might have been.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, before the game, if you'd have said would have been in that scenario, I'd have completely snapped your hand off. It was, you know, it's a pretty ridiculous situation to be in, really, considering the squads and the situation. You know, we didn't have the crowd to get behind us and things like that. So what could have been is yeah, probably the right words.
Yeah, but I'm thinking back to your Northampton debut as well, where you were part of the team that went to Anfield in the League Cup and won on your debut. So a little bit of you, having experienced it, Ben, must, as the clock ticked down, have been thinking, oh my goodness, we could be on the cusp of one of the biggest upsets ever in the Cup.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of them, you know, when the game's going on, you get to kind of 20 minutes, you get as a marker, you think, right, 20 minutes, we're halfway through the half, we can give yourself a little bit of belief. And then you get to half time and you're like, half time, we're saying, you know, we can win this, because of the way the first half panned out, it was, we can definitely win this. Then when we get the goal, it's like, we're going to win this. It's just, you know, that's the way it kind of went. And with 10 minutes to go, there was a bit of a break in play, and one of our lads, I think he had cramp, Finn Azaz, and I was going around to the lads just saying, look, 10 minutes of hard work saves us half an hour of, you know, getting punished, really, in extra time. Obviously, that wasn't how it was panning out, but yeah, that belief was definitely there. And with the way that we can kind of defend as a team, you always know that you've got a chance, but hey, the quality showed in the end.
Well, there was a lot of quality and a lot of plaudits coming your way as well, don't forget. I mean, just what is it like? Is it relentless? The powers of concentration are absolutely supreme. Cannot zone out for a micro.
That's exactly it. I mean, I'd consider myself to have quite high concentration levels, but yeah, you see the first two goals, that the fine margins in it was ridiculous. I think it was just, you know, not calling anyone out, but two lads were just a little bit deeper than the rest of the line, and that was the small margins in the game. And it's that, you know, that comes down to concentration. When you get tired, it's almost like a fitness in your mind. And unfortunately, we had a couple of lapses and that's what happens. You get punished at that level.
You know, you're still a young fella. You've got a long way to go. But when you look back, was that one of the great career highs for you? And I'm not just talking about playing Man City, but from a personal point of view, to take the plaudits of those two greats, Alan Shearer and Ian Wright, watching in and everybody talking about, and just about everything seemed to glue to you as well, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that it's. If you'd have said to me before the game I was going to get man of the match, I'd have been like, no chance. You know, it would have to be some performance to do so. But yeah, in terms of career highlights, I've had a few very, you know, like you say about the Liverpool one. We played Spurs when I was at Newport. We were, again, I think we conceded in the 83rd minute. We were 1-0 up. But for me, at the moment, playing in the position that I know best, and you know, I've only gone into this position really the last 2 years. I kind of feel like I'm coming into the prime of my career and really understanding the position. It felt so much more natural and so much better, like, rather than playing, you know, playing midfield against Spurs. And it was quite a dogged game, and you just kind of have to help everything on and try and win your individual battles. But yeah, it just felt so, it was, yeah, it's a fantastic moment.
Yeah, it's a far cry as well from the situation that you were outlining in the build-up to match 4 years ago, frozen out at Newport County. Actually, frozen out's a bit of a theme, because Ben Gibson, who we heard from earlier, had his problems at Burnley. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of people listening to this, Ben, who will not be feeling great because of the current situation, perhaps have had adversity in the form of losing their job and things like that. Do you feel stronger as a result of the whole experience you had 4 years ago?
Definitely. I mean, I'm actually very grateful and glad that I've been through that situation, as strange as it sounds. I feel like it's made me not only a better person, just appreciate everything in life, like, much more. Especially as soon as lockdown happened, it was kind of, you know, this is going to be a terrible, negative situation. And I remember a coach once said to me, it was in relation to football, you know, always take a positive from a negative, and it's so true that there's always positives from every negative. And in that, you know, it was relating to I just being released. So, you know, that was quite a massive negative at the time. But yeah, going back to that, it's kind of, yeah, you've just got to, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. There always is. And to be able to have been through it, and where I am now, I'm in an unbelievable place, and, you know, long may that happen.
I mean, you didn't play football for 6 months. Just how dark a place were you in, Ben?
It's only when you really think back and talk about it, you realise how bad of a place I was in, really. It was, yeah, it wasn't pretty. It was, It was pretty low. Football, like you've probably read, was I was done. I was completely done. I'd say I would give myself a 5 or 10% chance of really playing again at any kind of level, whether that was having a, you know, five a side with my mates, things like that. It's, but you know, it, and in the interview as well, it says about my two mates that came up and they noticed it in me, and they just couldn't believe, you know, what I would, the way I was speaking about football, because I always speak so passionately about it and love it so much. But in that moment, it was completely gone. It was just completely gone from me. And yeah, tough situation, really.
Were you actually contemplating looking for your next move? What would happen outside of football? Were you actually seriously looking around thinking, what am I going to do with the rest of my life?
Yeah, definitely. A 1,000,000%. I was, me and my wife now, she's my name, my wife, sorry. We were driving back from Plymouth to Cardiff, where we were living at the time. And, you know, I suppose when you're in the car, it's when you get a chance to really have a chat. And I told her, like, this is it. I said, that's me done. I even said, look, I think I'd be happy to just go and be a postman. You know, there's zero stress, or just, you know, exercise. And it's something that I think I really should look into. And you know, I think she'd even accepted it as well. You know, the fact that the way I was speaking and feeling, she didn't try and fight it, because she had been for the previous few months as well. So it genuinely was on my mind. And I'd have felt, probably at that time, I probably would have felt in a happier place than where I was. So, you know, it's strange to talk about it, really.
It is, yeah. And it's very brave of you to talk about it. But I guess I'm asking you the questions just to inspire those that might be listening to the Official EFL podcast who are going through a similar experience right now, can't really see what the future holds, thinking about a change of direction, and then to see the kind of rewards that you've got just a few years later. It's that old adage, isn't it? This too will pass, is that kind of expression, I suppose. Has anxiety always been part of your football career? Is there almost that little element of fretting and worrying? I mean, have you still got it in you now?
No, not at all. I mean, I've got two kids now, which is wonderful. They're my main focus in life. But yeah, going back to the anxiety thing, no, it's not anything I've ever struggled with. You know, everyone grows up playing football because they love it. As soon as it becomes a job, it does change. Everything kind of changes. There's much more on the line, and it's, you know, you're only one year's contract away from being out of a job with no kind of qualifications or experience in any other job. So it's quite daunting, but, you know, anxiety was never anything that played a part in my life before, really. And like I say, I'm glad I've been through it and I understand it, because I had a friend who had a panic attack and didn't realise that his body was having a panic attack 2 years ago. And I literally sat on his bed with him for about 2-3 hours, just letting him talk to me, tell me what's up with him. And he's a very proud, proud man. And I never expected him to ever open up to me. He was even, you know, crying to me. And thankfully, he's much better now. But yeah, just to have been through that situation and I could relate to it was something that's, you know, it's always stuck with me now.
Would that be your advice, Ben, to anybody that is currently struggling, is to find somebody, a friend, a family member, a work colleague, reach out to somebody and just try and get it off your chest?
Definitely, because I think as blokes, we shrug things off. You know, if someone says, if someone's coming across a bit negative all the time, people actually tend to walk away from them people. They're like, oh, I don't need that in my life. I don't need that negativity, which is... I think that's the moment when you really need to ask the person, like, are you okay? Is everything okay? Like, again, at the moment, it's really tough because people are probably having to speak on the phone, or they're not really going to want to speak on Zoom. And it must be really tough. But, you know, having been to a counsellor, someone who didn't know me, didn't understand any of the situation, knew nothing about football, really, but just spoke to me and made me understand why I feel the way I feel, was incredible, really. The first couple of sessions I didn't particularly like it. It felt a bit alien, and after that it got really it became normal. And I was telling them things I've never told my wife, told my family, which are you know, very, very deep conversations to have, but it also makes you really understand why you are thinking the way that you are.
Well, listen, thank you sincerely for sharing that. And I do hope it's of help to anybody who right now cannot quite see what the future holds or is not feeling great about things. Aside from your incredible marauding, obviously everybody's been talking about the long throws. Now, I'd like to do the minutiae part of this first. You've got towels around the ground. Mate, can the club not get some in club colours? I mean, there was a sort of checky beach towel at one corner, some washed out old thing the dog sat on in the other corner. I mean, who's coming up with those? Are they from home, by the way, or do the club provide them?
I thought you provided them.
No. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll gladly go and order you some on Amazon and get them sent. I mean, 20 quid for the towels would improve the aesthetic of your fine skill, Ben. Seriously, is that the kit man does that for you?
Yeah, it's the kit man. Do you know what? It was even the same situation last night. So I'll take a throw in, I'll use the towel, and you've got to throw that towel away after you use it. Not away in the bin, but you're not allowed to use that towel again, which is, I understand, you know, we've got a pandemic going on and it's all, you know, can be transmitted through things like that. But I'm literally the only person in that ground using them. There are several other ones that are there for other people. So if I'm taking 10 throw-ins a game, we're having to use 10 towels, which is completely bonkers, really. But yeah, that's probably why the scraggy old towels come out and it's not just the fresh red ones.
Yeah, mate, it's a good justification. I love it. Now, this is part of your game that you've developed over time, isn't it? I don't remember this in your early years being quite such a prominent part of your weaponry.
When I was signed by Newcastle and Sam Allardyce was the manager, he never knew about it. I didn't know about it. It was very strange. And then when I went on loan to Northampton, we were playing a game, I can't remember who against, and we were losing, and it was kind of like a bit of urgency. The ball's gone out. I've gone and took the throw and I've just launched it in the box. And I think everyone was as shocked as I was as to how far it kind of went. It's not something you ever practice in training. So, yeah, and then the following season, we used it, and AD Bruford was the manager, and I think we got 14 direct assists off it and several other goals from like knockdowns as well. So, and then I kind of went away from it. You know, you get labelled just a long throw, you know, you're just a long throw, which genuinely doesn't bother me. My response is, I've got a long throw. What have you got? You got nothing. So, yeah, when I went to Yeovil and Newport, they kind of didn't really want to use it, which I thought, fair enough, you know, I'm offering my kind of service in that aspect, and they didn't want to use it. So and last season we didn't use it, funnily enough, even though we'd done so well in the season, but you know, Gaffer and I sat down and discussed using it more, so, and it's working.
I love the danger as well. I love the fact that it upskilled City on a couple of occasions when they'd probably heard all about it, watched it on their own analysis of you, and then that you could just sense they were bricking it a bit as the ball was coming in, because they weren't quite sure exactly where it was, you know, just how much power it was going to have and how they were going to deal with it. Does it have an effect on your body? Do you have to get your alignment and your biomechanics right?
Yeah. We had a game last night and I feel it today. But that's just part and parcel wear and tear of football, I guess, any sport that you play. But going back to Pep, he was more than rattled. I think he was furious, to be honest with you. And I think he was genuinely panicking. You know, when we were 1-0 up, we had a throw in, and there was the situation where he stood in front of me, and I think the lad on one of their subs stood in front of me, wouldn't let me kind of take the throw in. And it was quite funny, actually, because I had to move a bit further back, but then I just moved the chair out of the way and I had a longer run up. So I was like, this is great. I can actually throw it further than if I was a few yards down the line. So, and the way he was kind of staring at me was brilliant. It was nice to have him in that situation, really.
Yeah, I quite liked that. That's the one that was sort of down the side of their technical area. And you did seem to be able to, well, listen, in normal circumstances, you'd have been in the crowd there, wouldn't you? From where it seemed to me, you started with that. Isn't that normally a standing area, or at least a walkway in front of the standing area? Yeah. Did he actually speak to you? Did he actually say anything to you?
Yeah, he was saying that. I genuinely can't remember what he was saying. But I was so focused at the time, to be honest with you, that I don't really know what he was saying. I was just smiling, laughing, you know, just thinking that's all you can do really to kind of get under their skin a bit more. If you just start arguing, it just looks a bit pathetic. So, I let him be rattled, and unfortunately, we couldn't make the second one pay. If we had have, I think I might have had a little celebration in front of him.
Yeah, I think you probably might have done. There's an aspect to this I quite like, which is that even for all his sophistication and trophies and all the rest of it, there's a little bit of the street rat about him, though, in terms of he'll do anything to help his team win. And I kind of respect that, no? Do you not? Do you agree with me?
Massively. I think he's an outstanding manager, of course. The best in the world, in my opinion, is, the way, like you say, he'll do anything to win. Which is testament to him. Testament. I mean, any winner would do anything to win. But yeah, he's at the end of the day. I think you see their first goal was actually one of their players hooked. I think it was their centre half, Garcia, hooked the ball on, played a big ball over the top. It fell down, and then they played the little box cross to score the goal. And it was like at that point we did have them, and they were trying to find any way to win possible, and they did in the end. So.
Loved the chat. I'm glad the kind of momentum has rubbed off in terms of getting you back to winning ways in the league, because that was getting a little bit worrying, wasn't it? Was it 7 games without a win, wasn't it, before you beat Oldham midweek?
Yep.
Can I ask you something overall? When you look back on your career, and it's obviously had highs and lows, and the money move to Newcastle, or the sort of bigger stage move, and then having to resettle and come back down, has football given you a good life overall, would you say?
Yeah.
Was that anxiety period and the problems at Newport just a blip?
Just a blip. It's been incredible. I mean, don't get me wrong, people probably don't appreciate how much of a stressful job it is. You're constantly thinking about the last game and then the next game, and like I say, my body today, you kind of feel it, and you're worrying about your aches and pains, and that's just normal. In terms of the life it's given me, it's been incredible. I've managed to live all over the country, experience all these different things, and that's definitely helped me grow as a person. And I'm very, very grateful to the game for what it's given me.
League Two fixtures this weekend. Early kickoff is Carlisle against Exeter. Cambridge entertain Crawley. Actually, Cheltenham, Ben's team, involved in the big game of the day at Forest Green, that's second against fourth. There's a right old muck and nettles tussle at the bottom of the table between Grimsby and Stevenage. Newport travel to Harrogate. Morecambe at home to Tranmere. And it's the Richie Wellens derby, I'm calling it that, as Salford travel to Oldham. Are you expecting to be in and around at the end of the season? Can you go one better than the playoffs you achieved last time around, Ben? Is that the plan?
Listen, it is a cliche in football, and we've kind of lost our way a little bit this, like the last 7 games, and what way we want to think about things. But we are honestly just taking it a game at a time now. We're not looking ahead to anything. It's I genuinely have not looked at the league once this season. It's just the way I've kind of played it this year. I just want to focus on the next game, and like I say, it's a cliche, but that's all we're doing. Forest Green is the next game. It's the derby. Can't wait for it.
I've loved the highs and lows of it. I loved watching you on Saturday, so congratulations. Good luck for the rest of the season. And if you need me to buy you a cohesive matching set of towels, just drop me a note, will you, and I'll get them sent to you, Ben.
Lovely. I think I've just emailed that now.
That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Benz, Tozer and Gibson. If you've enjoyed it, then please give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and please share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.